All right. Hey, what's the name of the stand-up today?
The stand-up. It's always the stand-up. That's what
Welcome to the stand-up. It's the same thing every time. We don't change the title. It'll be Trash's snack addiction right now with his microphone
Trash.
On.
What are you doing?
I'm getting my 9 a.m. Doritos.
Hashtag
you guys,
ad.
You guys don't do this? Oh, yeah. My 9 a.m. Chip break.
Could you tell us a little bit about the flavor, or dare I say taste sensation that you're experiencing right now?
Well, all I'm saying is that I don't ever eat breakfast, but when I'm sitting like in a meeting, I just have to snack.
Okay.
I just don't know. And then I bought these yesterday after dinner. I got party size.
Because it's always a party with Trash.
Anyways, sorry. I forgot to do the intro. Hey, everybody, on today's stand-up, we're going to be listening to Casey. And then Trash just left. Ruined my entire view. Thank you. Today, we're going to be listening to Casey. Hey, Trash, he's back. We're going to be listening to Casey give his origin story. Very exciting. Casey, take it away.
So the origin story is not even going to be 3 minutes. I'm going to have to pad this thing. What happened was that Jonathan Blow started, I don't even know, you'll have to ask him. He decided to stream his compiler, like a demo of his compiler. That's what actually originally happened to start it, because I don't know if you remember, but he made like the JAI, he did a demo of JAI really early on where like you could play Galaga basically at compile time.
Explain that a little bit more.
Well, yeah, I better, because we got to pad this out to 30 minutes. So one of JAI's big original features that now like everyone has copied, albeit poorly, is that anything that you do in the language can be run at either time. It can either be executed at compile time,
yep.
Or it can be executed as like, or it can be compiled into the program and executed there, right? So he demoed that in literally like 2014. Like that's how far ahead he was of everybody else. And that, because he wanted to demo that, he had a game. And what you could do is you could compile the game with JAI, but the act of compiling the game would play the game. Then the number of like enemies you killed before you died, and when you died, it would stop and finish the compile. That number would get compiled into the executable
that's crazy. It
actually produced, right? As it was just a cool demo. You're just trying to demo the fact that you could do anything at compile time that you wanted, to show how like robust the metaprogramming was going to be in this thing. So he did a demo where he showed that and lots of other things, like, you know, lots of other JAI features that he had implemented in the first round of JAI stuff. And
are you calling it JAI or JI?
JAI.
I was wondering about that, too, because I was thinking, man, he really was kind of way ahead of his time. He was putting AI into everything before it was cool.
That's a good point. If you called it JAI.
Yeah. Jonathan
like
AI.
John's AI.
Yes.
I don't know that he realized. Well, the reason that I don't think that he realized that was, yeah, because he didn't. You could run this on a single machine instead of having to have a data center full of like 100,000 in Blackwell.
Well, AI wasn't that advanced
GPUs.
Back then. Like, this was pretty normal behavior in 2014.
Yeah. But then how do you make money?
Yeah.
So, well, that I think John would like to know how to make money from making a language, because most of the time nobody really makes money from making a language.
True.
Right? You do all this work and like you don't really make money. So it's often like some of the thing. I mean, like, for example, Bill Hall, like he kind of works with JangaFX, which uses Odin. Right. Like you always have to. It sucks. Like, it would be cool if when you made a cool language that was actually going to be payment in and of itself, but usually it's not, because that's just the way the industry has shaken out, which of course also means you don't maybe get as much work on languages as you would like, because people aren't being paid to do it, right? Mm-hmm. Or they're getting paid to do it only pretty far after the fact, when like some company, you know, decides that maybe they're going to fund this thing or whatever. So it always has to find this sort of like secondary funding model, right? Like, that's not primarily, you weren't just paid because you made a language. You have to be paid because the language is used by a company that's doing something or whatever.
Developers, are you tired of code reviews that just say, looks good to me, or here's seven things I need you to change that are irrelevant to the PR? Well, meet CodeRabbit. AI reviews right inside your editor. Starting with VS Code, Cursor, and Windsurf. Sorry, no Vim yet. Hit review and bam. Out comes feedback even before you open a pull request. CodeRabbit can help flag bugs that your vibe coding with your LLM bots missed. And with one easy click, it can send all the context back to your favorite agentic tools for quick fixes line by line. CodeRabbit offers a generous free tier with up to 50 code reviews per day. Grab the extension now at coderabbit.link/primogen-vscode. Links in the description. And ship cleaner code today.
Mm-hmm. So anyway. Is Ginger Bill's model like the best model for making a profitable language is to just start a company that you solve a problem by writing a language for first? Which sounds very hard.
I don't know. I mean, you should ask him, have him on the stand-up. But I would imagine that it's a pretty good way. Like, if you have a company like DjangoFX that wants to do some cool stuff, and they're like, we kind of just don't want to be shackled to, like, C++ anymore. We want to have the flexibility to, like, get language features in a timely fashion that are well-designed and don't go through a committee that will make them terrible. Then, you know, if you've got someone who you trust who you can work with to do that, I think it would make perfect sense to pay them as an employee to just be the language guy, right? And, you know, I don't know how they all feel like this all worked out. You could ask them, but I'm imagining they're very happy. They have very successful products written entirely in Odin. Bill has really liked making Odin, so I think it was a win-win for everybody. But, you know, you should ask him. Have him on the show. See what he says.
Yeah. Jane Street is doing this basically too. Like, they've got their own fork of OCaml and everything, and okay. They just released their own. Like, now it's more like accessible for other people to try out their fork. It was pretty accessible before, but they like released it with a bunch of language features that they hope get put into OCaml. But they're also like, we don't really care in some ways. Maybe that's probably like a little bit reading right. Between the lines to the Jane Street folks, because they do try, but like. They have a whole team working on the compiler, doing crazy stuff, making it awesome.
What's it called?
Like, for them. What?
What's it called?
It's called OxCaml, because it's like, it's introducing.
That's what that, okay.
Yeah, it's introducing a bunch of like ideas.
Oh, is that the lifetime ones?
Yeah. Related to like this idea of oxidizing OCaml, like bringing some of the features from Rust into OCaml, but in a like.
In a convenient
better way. Yeah, right. It shouldn't change, like, the base way that you write OCaml, but then when you want to try and do something where you're saying, hey, like, let's allocate less, like, let's not get this to the garbage collector, we're going to have some proper ownership semantics of these things, you can specify those, and it just makes... Then you don't have to switch to a new language, right, to write the other part. So it's very cool. They're using it a lot because they have to write fast code to trade things faster than other people, I guess. I don't really know what they do, except, like, it
something
seems like
FPGAs
they...
FPGAs and OCaml, yep. That's all I know.
They do have a thing where you can program FPGAs with OCaml, yeah, called HardCaml. But I think wow. They just have a big printer inside where they
camel.
Print money. Like, I'm not yeah. really sure. Casey, that's not a joke, by the way. That's a real thing. They have that.
I kind of want to go look at this now because I would have thought that OCaml would... I mean, are FP bros furious that like, people are suggesting that you need features from Rust to make OCaml better? Like, what? How did that go over?
I think it's good. I think it's good. I think people in the OCaml community like it. I think it's pretty
oh, okay.
cool. Yeah. I mean, right. OCaml is much more pragmatic than like Haskell Bros, right? They're kind of
sure,
like,
that's true.
So, and yeah. it's, and all of the people like most interested in it, I think are like, it's cool that Jane Street makes money and we're like more confident OCaml will still be a thing in 5 years. Like,
okay. Cause yeah, it's
know,
got a sponsor now, right? It's got
right
a,
yeah. I mean, it yeah. has for a long time. Right. But it's yeah. kind of nice to see like, oh, they can push forward like their vision of some stuff and see what happens. I don't know. I think it's cool. It's very interesting too, because most of the time, I feel like when I write Rust, I really just want to say, like, does this thing live in this function or does it, like, escape the function, right? Global or local, like, ownership. And that would simplify, like, a lot of very painful things in Rust if you couldn't specify, like, in between lifetimes. Like, oh, it lasts as long as, like, the outer scope of this function attached to, like, this, right? Like, that's where a lot of really painful lifetime semantics come in. But like for OKAML, it's like, oh, well, we can just say like the garbage collector will handle it if it escapes this region. Otherwise, we're going to basically like stack allocate it. Not exactly, but like close. And then we'll be able to like free those really quickly and easily. So it has a lot of cool features that are not like just straight wholesale copied from Rust, but that I think will improve the language, like in terms of making it go zoom, zoom, and like multi-core safe stuff too, which is nice.
Damn, that's crazy. Casey, we got to get back to your origin story. We're so far out of the pod right now.
But that's it. I mean, like, literally, if you guys don't keep doing that, there is no stand-up. Because we are now, we have now finished a minute and 30 seconds of the 3 minutes that I've got. So the next thing say is going to be the end of the story.
I'm ready.
Don't worry. Don't worry. All right. We got something for you.
So John did that. He did that demo. And there were maybe like three streams or something. He did like a series of them. So it wasn't really a recurring show, but it was kind of like, oh, John's kind of streaming now, right? And
wait, is this on Twitch? Or like
where? It was on Twitch. Okay. And then he posted them on YouTube afterwards, but it was on Twitch. And so at that point, because people knew I had worked on The Witness, because I used to publish this little blog called Witness Wednesdays, where I would talk about something that we were doing on the game, and people knew that, and they asked me when was I gonna stream on Twitch. Right, they were just like, "Oh, John's streaming on Twitch," which he hadn't like committed to or anything. He didn't start the John Show, but he like he had enough on Twitch that kind of seemed like, "Oh, okay, John's just gonna be doing streaming now." Like he would, I think he maybe even did some when he just was working a little bit, right? So he was like the person who started that whole thing, was him. And so then I was like, all right, I guess I'll try something. There you go.
What'd you try?
Did you try, though?
Handmade Hero.
Which is?
Yeah, you gotta go.
I know what it is,
details.
Casey, but.
I mean, I just tried like doing anything. Well, I'll just start making a game. I'll do all the things that we normally do, right? I'm like, well, I'll make a platform layer. I'll, you know, make a rendering backend. I'll, you know, show how to load bitmaps and that stuff. That was it. So
did you make
the
game?
What?
Did you end up making the game all the way through?
No. I mean, like, as with everything, I cannot design games. I am so bad at it. So basically, like, really, you can only count on me to make engines. That's all I know how to make. If that makes sense, like I kind of need somebody else to come in and do whatever the game is, and then just tell me what you need, and I will make that for you, right? But like game design stuff is just not my thing.